This week on Constructive Criticism, the guys dive into the GP weekend, as well as discuss an awesome topic on staying engaged in a match of Magic. I had my BB on Tuesday, right after the podcast was recorded, and there was an audio issue that I wasn't able to fix. I was able to edit it out, so I'm pretty sure you get all of the training grounds and just miss part of the power rankings. Enjoy the episode, sorry for the audio issues, and we'll see you guys all next week. Of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-host, Michael.
What's up?
And Casey, who just found out that Optimus Prime rides a dinosaur in one of the Transformers movies.
That's true. That actually changed my outlook on that whole series. I'm going to have to revisit that.
Yeah.
It's mostly given me, a sort of existential crisis where I'm disappointed that that's not my life. But
yeah, right. Because, I feel like I can do almost anything I really set my mind to, but I could never do that.
You know, with enough patron dollars, we might be able to make that happen. This podcast is brought to you by the patrons of the show, and, maybe we can make that a patron goal one day. Like,
sure.
Who
robot
knows?
Dinosaurs to ride into battle.
Either this podcast is going to have to get a lot bigger, or robot dinosaurs are going to have to get a lot cheaper.
Either way, let's make it happen. The newest patron this week is Mason, so shout out to Mason. I can't do this with a straight face. It's really hard. Like, I'm not going back. Like, this is a great intro, but, the fact that, the look of pure joy on Casey's face, not even when he saw it, but when I literally said, because I was like, yeah, you just get something out of, there's a certain subgroup of people that want to watch giant robots fight each other. And Casey was like, well, I love Pacific Rim. And I was like, oh, maybe you should watch the fourth Transformer movie because, that's basically the plot.
Good. I mean, that's, you just don't need one, right?
Yeah, we were talking about this. It's kind of true. As long as you know your plot is bad and you're cool with that, it's mostly fine.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about Godzilla specifically.
Yeah, as long as you know what you have and you're not trying to make a plot-driven movie, I'm fine watching robots fight each other.
It's somebody who cares deeply about this podcast and the flow and what we talk about and things. I couldn't imagine putting Pacific Rim out into the world because I feel like you could just do it on such a small budget and
Yeah, but it wouldn't be as good, right? The special effects in the movie were actually awesome.
That's true.
And
it's just that they had a limited budget, and then they, bought all the special effects first, and they were like, oh, man, we don't have any money left
wasn't
for anything else.
Didn't they, So, hold on. From my understanding of Pacific Rim is they were supposed to make the Halo movie.
Yeah, and then, they pulled, the funding out from that, and they, just used what they had left over to make Pacific Rim.
Right.
That makes it so much better. They're like, well, we were going to make a real movie.
It was supposed to be the movie for, Halo, the video game, right?
Yeah, and then...
And then, the big chunk of money that they had to make that movie got pulled. And then well, we still have, this money.
Yeah, and, so we have, a bunch of technology for, animating robots. And we can probably animate some Godzillas. And, fill in the rest.
Alright.
Boom, snap it off.
Yeah.
Boom. Alright, so don't forget that you can become a patron too to fulfill Casey's dream of riding a giant dinosaur robot into battle by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. You can also support the podcast by going to Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code ccmtg at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code wouldthatbegood, no spaces. Oasis really is the best place to buy Magic cards. We don't just say that. I was in Oasis today, got great customer service. I have a couple of stories from people about Oasis games that we'll be telling on the next couple podcasts probably. But if you have a story about Oasis and why you love them and why you should shop there, let us know. We saw a story from somebody in our Facebook group that didn't buy their cards from Oasis game, bought cards on Thanksgiving, and they didn't get there in time. And somebody immediately in the comments said, when I buy cards from Oasis, they get there in 2 days, man. Like, you should just buy cards from there. And that's true. You should.
True that.
Unless Michael's working.
Yeah, he's good for nothing.
Yeah.
But everybody else.
Whoa. You can't just throw Matt Clay insults at Michael Hinderocker.
Okay, that's fair. He's good for not being Matt. that's
so start. Kind, Casey.
Yeah.
Don't get soft.
This week for the trade agents, we're going to talk about something really special. And by special, I mean that I think that it's really important. We're going to talk about being present and what that does in the game of Magic. But before we do that, let's go to our next segment, which is hashtag always improving. Every week on the podcast, we talk about something that's what we're doing to try to help us improve at Magic or life in general. And because we believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we always want to be doing what we can to be getting better so that one day we too can ride giant robots into battle. So, Casey, what have you done to improve at Magic or life this week?
This week, I spend a ton of time trying to prep for this GP. I didn't have a lot of time before this week, and I felt like I was on a cram session, and I played a ton of leagues. I talked to the people who have played the deck that I ended up playing a lot, and like picked their brain and tried to get as much feedback as possible, and really just kind of felt like playtesting back in the day where we would just play so many millions of matches.
Sure.
And just kind of getting back in that groove, and it really helped me out a lot in this tournament.
All right, Michael.
I felt like I did a good job. Kind of, I was like pretty unbelievably tilted, during GP Denver, like in the early parts of it, and did a good job, sort of getting my head right, bouncing back, and putting up a respectable finish.
What had you tilted?
I had two buys and then was 3-3, so like that's, you know, pretty terrible or whatever, but just the way I was losing was sort of unreal. I lost a couple of games in ways that, at least one match, I am quite sure I was over 999 out of 1,000 to win. I don't know that I've ever lost a game so improbably and so tiltingly at the same time.
Could it be that your fantasy luck took away from your Magic luck?
So that's possible, but you know, my deck also started like, you know, not doing things like that to me anymore after that round. So I felt like, you know, basically once I'd gotten over like the most soul crushingly tilting loss of all time, my deck was just like, well, you didn't shoot yourself between rounds, so we're going to be nice to you now.
And it'll be great. We're going to do a podcast sometime in the next year about how everyone is lucky and there's no really such thing as being unlucky.
Yeah.
Not in a big sample size.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. So with that being said, what did you learn from that? Like, what was something that you took away from having the most tilting loss of your life?
I mean, that mainly just that, like, it's not over until it's over. Like, this happened to me at the RPTQ as well, where I lost a match that I was really upset about, but, you know, understanding that, like, until you're eliminated, you have to just sort of try to bounce back from things that have upset you in some way. And, you know, if you get eliminated, like, ruminate on it for a little while, it's okay to be upset and then move on. But if you're still in the event, you have to like kind of try to pull yourself together and just get over it.
Right. Completely agree. So on, was it Sunday? It was yesterday. Wasn't it yesterday that I thought I was having a baby?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So Sunday, I was watching a lot of Magic coverage, and I was trying to watch the Patriots, who were on TV that day, and watching Tom Brady get his 201st win as much as that I could before Fox pulled the rug out from under me, which we'll get into at the end of the show. I had a lot of self-reflection about, you know, watching Tom Brady throughout his career and how that's impacted my life, And then, of course, my wife, you know, shows me her phone with her app that tells her when she's supposed to go to the hospital. And it says, go to the hospital or call an ambulance, you know, right away. So, but
what app is that?
It tells it
specifically for pregnant people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like it like a... tells you like how far, like it, you record your contractions on it and then it's like, okay, it's time to go.
It's neat.
But before all of that happened, I had a moment where I thought about like things that I've done in my life that have led me up to like where I'm at, where the podcast is at, things like that. And I think that there's a few actual like real key things in my life. Like my parents are probably one of them. My relationship with Devonair, my job that I currently have and like being employed there. And I would actually say being a Patriots fan and watching Bill Belichick is a huge part of like my outlook on life and even my outlook on Magic. I think that because of the way the Patriots do what they do, and yeah, all those of you who like want to say something, just say it. But I think that like I hold people to a higher standard because of them. Like I just like it's the whole fumble thing, right? Like they're just if you fumble the ball as a Patriot, like they bench you, right? Like sure. There's some mistakes that are unexcusable. And I think that I've adopted a lot of that into my life and I'm very grateful for that. So that's it. Like I think that the podcast is better and I'm better for being a Patriots fan. So and that's cool. I think that I'm like not willing to put up like little stupid mistakes for myself. A lot of that comes from hearing the coach speech. What is the word I'm looking for?
Coach speak
from Bill.
Sure.
Or from even from what was the whole coaching tree really?
Bill Parcells.
Yeah, the whole tree. Bill Parcells coaching tree. Like just listening to them. I think that a lot of it's like people are like, oh, it's coach talk, but like at the same time, like first of all, they're not going to give you any information, but also like don't ask me about the kicker. Like I don't have an answer for you. And what's really happening is like this other thing, but you want to like pull attention to this thing. And I think that happens in Magic a lot, where we like to blame like the last turn of the game, right? Rather than like look at the game holistically. And I think that Bill Parcells coaching tree, when they look at a football game, they just like they literally don't care what happened last play of the game, right? Like,
yeah,
it's just not what happened in the game. It's what a play that happened in the game, but like it's not the game. And I think that if everybody took that approach to Magic, they would just be a lot better at Magic.
I think it ties into being result focused versus process focused, right?
Right.
That like you do the best you can and hopefully you win, but you win by doing the best you can, yeah. Not by winning.
And we've said even on this podcast, like we really like those wins that when we get a win but can learn something from it and like take away something from it. And that's like the Bill Belichick philosophy, right? Is I'm glad you guys won. Now that you've won, let's fix this because you guys sucked at this.
Right. You didn't get punished for it this time.
Yeah.
Don't keep
when you feel like
that's going to happen.
You got a free one, basically.
Right. And yeah. I just want to give a shout out to Tom for getting, you know, all-time wins record. And I really thank Bill Belichick. Like, I think that he has had a bigger impact on my life than I feel like a sports coach that I've never in my life should. But maybe that's just true of all sports fans. Like, I would say that, like, Bronco Mendenhall of BYU had, like, a big impact on my life, too. And I've never, I mean, that's not true. I actually have met that guy, but like, I don't know him personally.
Sure. Or even, like, Greg Popovich for the Spurs, right? He's basically the same guy.
Yeah. I think that, like, if you are a Spurs fan, you might also have a similar outlook, right? Like, where, like, it's not important for Tim Duncan to actually score 20 points. Tim Duncan scores 20 points and gets those rebounds and, does what he does because he does what he's supposed to do. And people, we got a lot of complaints last time we talked sports on this podcast, so I don't know why I'm doing it now, but I think there's a lot of really good comparisons to draw from that kind of approach, kind of like Michael said, that process approach. So, yeah, that was not how I improved, but a moment of self-reflection in my life. So, yeah, let's go to Card of the Week, brought to you by Patreon.com. You can go to Patreon.com/CCMTG. You can be a patron of $3 or more to become a patron of the show. That's not true. You can donate any amount you see fit, but to win Card of the Week, it has to be three or more. And this week, the card goes to Adam W., and we're giving away a Panharmonicon. So that doesn't sound that cool, except if you watch the GP this weekend.
Yeah, it's That is one of the sweetest decks I have seen in my life. And the fact that it's like at all good, which I think it is very good. I think that it may actually be a prominent deck going forward. Like, just the whole Panharmonicon into Cloudblazer, it's actually, like, I said at the GP that it's the broken version of Sphinx's Revelation, which is, like, maybe a small exaggeration, but 5 mana, 4 cards, 4 life, and a 2-2 flyer is, like, not nothing. That is a combo deck.
No, I honestly, like, so I've played against this deck in the Top 8 of States. I played against a player playing basically this deck.
Sure.
That he had brewed. And then you and I both played against it on Wednesday, right before the GP. So, you got to play against this deck before the GP. Like, good job.
Yeah. I didn't get to play against it at the GP, but it's good because it was actually a really hard match to win.
Yeah.
Just because, like, how can you ever beat that many cards in life?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not very good at applying pressure and not very good at killing permanents, it's definitely...
Yeah, like...
It just... You think things are fine, and then they're just not.
Yeah.
I think I read in the Facebook group that someone typed up this sequence. It was like, okay, flicker my Drowner of Hope, get 4 Scions. Sack 3 Scions, repeat that a million times. Flicker my Cloudblazer until I draw my Thought Not Seer. Flicker my Thought Not Seer until I deck you.
That's just good, clean
yeah,
fun.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
I guess that happens to me.
Both teams played hard. Like...
Yeah, my team just got to make infinite mana, draw my deck, and then make you draw your deck.
Yeah, exactly. We're both going to draw a lot of cards here, but it's going to be a lot
more
fun.
Yeah, you're just
going to
draw too many.
but it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of fun had, and I'm going to have all of it. Right. Or you might have a lot of it if I do it one at a time, and like you don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
Eventually, it might be pretty fun for you until you see what's going on, but most of the fun will be had by me.
The deck looks kind of terrible.
Yeah,
like if you just read the cards, it seems like it should be awful.
Right.
But
it seems like the most ridiculous deck of all time, right?
If you're not being punished for tapping out to play Panharmonicon, any follow-up to Panharmonicon is great. Right.
Yeah, even just like Reflector Mage.
Sure.
Reflecting 2 guys is so powerful.
Yeah, well, it's
like that's like a Wrath of God mind twist split card.
That's actually the thing is like, and this, I think I said this, the tournament, like the podcast after States, where I talked about this deck a little bit, I think, on the podcast that day. And I was like, yeah, because like he had Panharmonicon and Reflector Mage. And when he Reflector Maged his opponent, like in the third round, his opponent like looked at Reflector Mage, looked at Panharmonicon, looked at the cards, put them in his hand and like...
Not to be treated this way.
Like, it just seems so unfair. Because, like, honestly, Reflector Mage is already unfun. We really need it to be double unfun.
Well, and think, like, I mean, we've all had, you know, Eldrazi Displacer or Reflector Mage happen to us before.
Right.
But this time it's just like, oh, cool. The old one-sided upheaval, that seems good.
Yeah, well, when he Reflector Maged my Ishkana and my Emrakul, and I was like, activate Aetherworks Marvel, take nothing, because I can't cast any spells. Like, that felt really powerful. Like,
yeah,
it was actually just one of the sweetest matches of Magic I've ever played in my life.
Yeah. But yeah, so Adam, we will be setting you up Panharmonicon. Just shoot me a message on Facebook or shoot a message to the Patreon. We'd love to hear from you just to get that sent over your way. We do have a question this week from one of our patrons, and he asks, I want to improve in Magic and MTGO. Seems like I want to improve in Magic, and MTGO seems like the best way. But the future of the program scares me. Do you guys ever worry about this kind of stuff, investing in things like MTGO? No. So, I don't see MTGO as the same kind of investment as a lot of people, because you can so easily sell your cards and, like, get out of MTGO really fast. And let's say that we spend $300 on a really expensive deck, right? And we get to play that deck for an entire season, play in a couple PPTQs, RPTQs, you know, whatever it is with that deck. Play tons of events, testing for the events and things like that on MTGO that we wouldn't have gotten to do on paper. There's a few things that I look at here. That's like, as far as like what my time is worth and things like that. One, these are matches of Magic that I wouldn't have gotten to play had I not spent that money. Two, this is Magic that I got to play. Right? Hours of Magic that I've enjoyed playing because I was playing on MTGO. So because of those things, I just don't think about, like, even if Moto crashed tomorrow, I've already gotten time out of these cards.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it depends on what your budget and your lifestyle is like, right? Like, $300 is more to some people than it is to others, and that's certainly a factor. The key is definitely not to think of it as an investment, though. Think of it as a sunk cost, something that you're going to spend the money on and enjoy. And if you end up being able to recoup any of that value down the road, great.
I mean, the thing is, you will likely be able to recoup most of your non-event value. Like, especially if you're buying into cards in a format like Modern. Like, it's just unlikely that the prices on, you know, Noble Hierarch and Inkmoth Nexus are going to change all that much in the next 2 months.
Even in Standard, like...
Yeah, usually you can recoup 90-plus percent of your
value. But whatever. So if you say, you know, you're not necessarily really spending this money. You're holding it as a deposit. I mean, you still mostly have it. You can have it in your PayPal account in about 20 minutes.
Right.
Your bank account in a day. So
it's not, like, gone. And, I mean, I understand, like, concerns. Magic Online is not the greatest program, and it's possible they'll want to move a different direction in the future. But I really... If you want to practice high-level Magic quickly... It's not just the best option, it's your only option. There's just, nothing else that's even close. I mean,
and that's the thing, is that he's saying that he has stores near him that play Magic, but like he just doesn't feel like he's getting what he can out of it.
So yeah, I mean, I would say like playing competitive leagues is probably, it depends a little bit, but close to a GP level.
Oh. Yeah, it's close. It's like it's above average competition.
So you're not playing like Platinum Pros a lot of the time, obviously, but you are playing players who are saying, "I am willing to bet money that this deck is good and I'm good at Magic." And there's a lot of like,
right?
It's hard to get better without playing players who are as good or better than you.
Yep.
And there are a lot of really good players on Magic Online.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that you have two really good options here. One of them is Modo. I think that Modo is, like, despite what many will tell you, there's a learning curve. I think that Modo is really good at doing what it does once you understand the client. The hard part is getting to understand the client.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's really good. I feel like that's being overgenerous. Like, it has a lot of flaws. But it's not... It's not as... We bag on it. Everybody bags on it. It's not as bad as people make it sound. It is bad.
I think that it's literally the best thing you can do if you want to get good at drafting.
That is true. For like a Magic practicing tool, it is great. Yes. As a piece of software, it is terrible.
Sure.
Right. But anyway. But yeah, I mean, I think that's basically... If you're looking for a glitzy, you know, user interface or whatever, Magic Online is going to be really disappointing. Yeah. But the flip side is like... When you can't sleep at 2 a.m. and you're like, oh, hey, I want to play, you know, 3 matches of competitive Magic, you can't exactly call your buddy and be like, hey, you want
to,
like...
Yeah, Casey really wouldn't probably take well to me knocking on his door at 3 a.m. to play Magic.
Yeah.
But
I had to put a lock on the door specifically for that reason.
Yeah. I was just getting in with that one too much. But the second thing that you can do other than play Magic Online that I would recommend if you're having these troubles that you've indicated to me additionally is... I would just reach out to find players in your area that have similar mindsets to you, because what you'll find is, like, if you just, like, say, all right, you and I are going to get better together, I don't know, maybe this isn't good advice, because, like, if the store just is too casual for you, maybe the better option is to find a better store. Or not better, but a more competitive store.
A store that fits your needs better.
Yeah, exactly. But MDGO will do that for you, and I think that the upfront investment is typically worth that. So, anyway, thank you so much for the question, Mason, and I hope that we were helpful. I think that it's something that a lot of people are scared of, especially with like the bad rep that MDGO generally gets in some cases and doesn't in others. Like, I think that what Casey said is perfect. Like, if you're looking for a tool to practice Magic, MDGO actually is really good at it.
It's the best by a lot.
Yeah, and there's not even really a second place, right? Like,
yeah, it's else like a whole different.
I would say that you and I sitting across from each other playing Cockatrice it's significantly better than Magic Online, specifically because we're not really playing online.
Yeah, I mean, so that is true, but like playing Cockatrice in general is it has its flaws.
I don't even know that that's true because it depends so much on what you want to test. Like, if I want to play matchups, but I'm not like, so the nice thing about testing with people is you can test matchups. The bad thing about testing with your friends is that sometimes you don't know anyone who can play the deck you want to test against at a high enough level. And like, when you play someone in a Magic Online League, you I mean, I guess you don't always know that they're great, but you know that they're good enough or they believe in themselves enough to bet money that they're better than you are. So there's something to be said for like just actually playing. Playtesting is, I would say, a little bit different than playing on Magic Online generally, but playing for money, there's value in that. It has a different feel
to it. I think that's true. Yeah. I think that what I get out of playtesting and what I get out of my Wednesday win a box is at Oasis are just completely different things.
Right.
That's actually what I would compare a competitive league to, is more like a really top heavy win a box where people are like, kind of what you said, they're players that are good enough to be willing to bet money that they're going to win that box.
I mean, I would just say this, almost everyone who is playing like more than a couple of GPs a year is playing on Magic Online a lot.
Yep. So, all right. Thank you so much for your question. And let's go on to power rankings. So every week on the podcast, we're going to rank decks from a given event. Casey, what event and what format are we doing this week? And how does the rankings break down?
So many questions. Okay. So we're doing a whole bunch of events. There was a lot of standard played this weekend. So we have two Grand Prix, Madrid and Denver, a SCG Invitational, and an SCG Open.
We don't usually include Invitational Worlds. How do we do it this time?
Basically with the performing decks.
Sure.
The 7-1 decks and better, whatever.
So how did that break down?
So normally you get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, 2 for top 16. For those decks, basically it's by category. So 8-0 would be 6, 7-1 is 5, 6-2 is 4, so on and so forth.
And then top 64 in these we gave 1.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome.
Actually, no, that's not true, because I only found top 64 for one of the GPs and not both.
Oh, they both had them.
No, I didn't see them where I was looking. But I don't.
That explains black-white's numbers.
That they don't exist? You mean black-greens?
No, I mean black-white was easily the third place deck.
Black-white humans?
Mm-hmm.
You need to refresh. Because that one has blue-white flash twice, because I didn't realize that. Yeah, sometimes mistakes are made. So humans did show up.
Okay. Hold on 1 second so I can edit this out. Okay, so which tournament did we have the top 64 for in these rankings?
Neither of them. Because there was only available for one of them. So just
did the top 32.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Cool.
So basically it breaks down. This one is bigger, so in going across so many different events, it sometimes doesn't tell the whole story of any one event.
Yeah.
So these might be a little bit surprising if you look at just the results of one tournament, but when you look at all of them together.
Sure. And I think that they still do tell a story.
Yeah.
So going into this weekend, I want to preface kind of like where Standard was at before today, being Monday the 5th of December. So what we had were people literally saying that Standard was bad, over, done. And then you had us who recorded a Patreon-only podcast who used the words best Standard format of all time. And Michael, I think that you were pretty big on that side. Just the number of different types of decks, the play of the deck specifically was something you liked.
Yeah, so with, spoiler alert, with Marvel doing so well, I'm not 100% sure. I'm a little scared of where the format is going to go from here going forward. It's a deck that I am more comfortable with as a fringe deck than as the best deck in a format. So I'm curious to see where things go, but I felt very vindicated given that I'd basically been printing money on Moto with Marvel the last week and a half, that it just crushed
within everything. Within our testing group, you and Matt both said you would rather be playing Modo than doing whatever you were doing because it was worth more money to you playing Modo.
I made more money playing Magic Online than I did working, like, easily, like, twice as much.
Yeah. So, with that being said, I want to break down to you why people thought this. So, what's happening is that there was... People called it a two-deck format, so they believed that the format was black-green and blue-white. Black-green, Delirium, blue-white Flash. The format, to me, has always been at least a three-deck format, right? With Mardu vehicles included in that.
Yeah, it's certainly around.
Yeah. So, but the truth is, and what I said before the Pro Tour, I actually did a video on this. You can go to the YouTube channel to find out. I did a video called Best Format Ever? And the thing is I predicted a long ago that Blue-White Flash would come in a-blazing, knock out the Marvel deck, the control decks would knock out the Marvel deck, then Black-Green would come in, disrupt that, and that Marvel decks of some kind would come back in when people didn't expect them to.
Right.
And I said that on this podcast. And this is what's a rotating format, right, where decks and cards are better depending on what's good that week, what's played that week.
I'm interested, though, because as things are, as the blue-white decks are being constructed right now, I would say the Marvel decks are...
They are very favored.
They're just favored.
They are favored. Matchup. And I think it's actually your best matchup. A lot of people think it's green-black, but I actually think it's blue-white. Well,
that's a little bit what makes me nervous about this format going forward.
But I think that we will get into why I think it's going to be okay. So, with all of that preface said, let's get into the rankings. So, coming in at fifth place, we have Humans decks with 11. This deck came out of nowhere. So, there was a blue-white deck, a green-white deck, and a red-white deck, in addition to mono-white decks splashing black for Scrap Heap Scrounger, activating their Shambling Vents, and some sideboard stuff. Now, what's really impressive here is actually the number of top 64s that this deck put up, which isn't included in the rankings. This deck plays... let's see here. 4, 8, 12, 16... Is it 21 drops?
I think it might be 24. It's like Stern Constable, Town Gossip Monger... Is it Expedition Envoy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's playing, like, you name it. It's playing Stern Constable. That should tell you a lot.
If you make it as far as Stern Constable,
right? Thraben Inspector, right?
Oh, sure. So there's 16. I mean, I looked at this deck and briefly considered testing it, and then was just like, I'm not playing a deck with Stern Constable, so...
Yeah, so I actually did test the deck today. I actually considered buying the deck, just snap buying it. So
you had $10?
Yeah, so here's the thing.
$8, Casey.
I practice something that we preach very heavily on this podcast. So usually we say that if you're going to test a deck made popular by somebody else, you need to test their version before you make your own changes, right? Because they probably had a reason for things that they were doing. And that is a moment that I definitely had today in testing this deck, where I was like, all right, so I'm going to test this and we're going to see how this goes. Oh man, that is playing Heroes Grace Champion. All right. Good job, Craig. sorry. But what I noticed quickly is this card, what was the card called?
Stern Constable.
Yes. That's the white tap thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that card is way better than it looks like. Like a lot better.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot better than it looks like is, like, you know,
a 1 out of 10.
Merely unplayable, not the worst card.
No, so here's the thing is I quickly realized that I did not want zero of them. So the deck has 4 Expedition Envoys, 4 Stern Constable, 4 Thraben Inspector, 4 Toolcraft Exemplar, and 4 Town Gossip Monger. So that 20. Is 21 yep. drops. Which is a lot.
Yeah, that's like basically all of them, right? Like, that are in standard, and it's
yeah.
You're making a statement with what kind of person you are and what kind of deck you play when you play that many one drops.
Yeah. So one thing that I would say about the deck is after testing it that I don't think that I want 4 Stern Constable. I do think I might want 2, and I think that I would play the other. Is it Militia? Hanwar Militia.
captain. Yeah, the two drop that flips when you have four creatures.
Yep. So I want that in this deck with all of these one drops, and I would play that over at least two of those, at least over two of those. But overall, I was impressed. I was killing people so fast. Like always watching just.
Yeah, I mean this is the same, basically the same thing we've seen before, except now you have Scrap Heap Scrounger, which is at least gives you some hope of beating a card like Kozilek's Return.
Yeah, and obviously like,
and Copter helps a little bit there too.
Copter helps a lot because like you can just hold like one of your one drops and then just like it's like here's something that literally happened in testing today. I had a draw where my board got wiped with a Scrap Heap Scrounger and a Smuggler's Copter in play. I just bought back. I mean, you have so little. The mana cost is so small. You can just buy back the Scrounger to crew the Copter, and even if you don't like, you can just like play one of your one drops, right? Or you can do both in one turn, and you're already way far ahead. So
yeah,
and you can hold the other thing back to crew the Copter and block with it because it's gonna have vigilance.
Right.
So there are good things about this deck. The bad things about this deck are that you have a lot of draws where your your creatures just get brick walled pretty easily. If your opponent really is able to like do much, you sometimes just...
And I think that was why I found that I liked Stern Constable, is that if I got one in play, like I could really help prevent that brick wall.
Yeah, I just know having played against this deck with a deck, you know, with one main deck, Kozilek's Return.
And three main deck Ishkanas.
And, yeah, right. But, like, Ishkana was the end of the game. Kozilek's Return bought me enough time to get to something better. And, you know, I mean, it does some powerful things. It's just very much... It's very much all in on pressing its early advantage. And it's generally... I mean, you have things that buy back, but... They're mostly good against the hand that is a sweeper and nothing else. If they have a sweeper into something, it doesn't really matter that you were able to get your one Scrap Heap Scrounger back.
Yeah, that's kind of my version of this deck is, when you come out guns blazing, you'll probably kill a lot of decks when they're still in the setup phase of their game. Like, Green-Black Delirium usually has to spend a few turns in setup before they can really start to make meaningful plays, because they have to get Delirium early, where the deck kind of doesn't function. So... If you can catch them in the Vessel Traverse part of the game...
That's my thought.
And there's, like, five life before they can play their, you know, Liliana.
I actually feel this way... Well, what I noticed about the deck is specifically how good I felt like it was, and I could be wrong, you guys can correct me, against Blue-White Flash.
Yeah, Blue-White Flash, in general, is, like... This is pretty much always true. The aggro decks are great against the tempo decks, because all of the, you know, Reflector Mage elements or whatever... They're just too slow, especially when you're on the draw.
Well, when
all
your
that
tempo
stuff
plays
is just
are like three mana plays, it's like one of your goals to get around a tempo deck is right to get under them. And when you have 21 drops in your deck, like
right. I mean, if you go Toolcraft Exemplar into Thraben Inspector Toolcraft Exemplar, sure, yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I would assume that it's a little bit play draw dependent because I think if they do go like Inspector into Copter. Like, you're going to have a little bit of a hard time attacking if you
don't
have a copter.
Yeah, but you're good. We've already discussed, like...
Well, but, like, I'm just saying, like, that's not even, like, the nuts, right? That's just good.
But, no, I think their next play would have to be something like a Reflector Mage, right?
Sure, but even, like, even if they Spell Queller your...
Sure.
Anything, right? You're always watching, like, you kind of had a really
bad turn.
But
that's the thing, right? This tempo deck needs to go one drop, two drop, three drop. They so have one of their best draws to beat you.
Yeah, I would imagine when Blue-White is on the play... It's probably not horribly unfavored for them, but when it's on the draw, it's probably pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I would assume is. It's pretty close to even on the when Blue-White's on the play, and just a beating when Humans is on the play.
So you did play against this deck with Marvel, because I would assume from the results, I didn't get to play against Marvel today. I think I only played three or four matches with the deck. I played against Blue-White twice and some other stuff. That, and maybe that's why I'm so high on the deck is because I got to play against Blue-White. But it would seem to me that all of your problems with Mardu vehicles are more manifested in this deck than in Mardu vehicles.
No, just it's the vehicles in Mardu vehicles that give you problems.
But aren't like most of them just playing the same vehicles?
No, they're playing Cultivator's Caravan. And it's Cultivator's Caravan specifically that gives you problems.
Yeah, I got killed by Fleet Wheel Cruiser out of Mardu vehicles this weekend. Like, that kind of stuff, it's like, ugh. Like,
yeah, the problem is this deck is like a lot worse against Kozilek's Return than the slower vehicles decks.
Yeah, and has a lot fewer unlicensed integrations.
It just a lot less reach. Like, yeah. When you play an Ishkanai, it's deck and stone or concede, basically. And, I mean, I think the results from the weekend basically bear out that matchup is not very good for the human decks, just given that there were the very top end of the human decks were below the top end of the Marvel decks, for sure.
Sure.
I think. In addition, I know that, like, we didn't play this, but some of the teamer versions were playing, like, a bunch of Whirler Virtuosos. And yeah, I could imagine like that card being beating. Just an insane nightmare for decks like this.
Sure.
You have so many X1s. I mean, you have a lot of ways to pump them, but, like, you're not always going to draw them or whatever.
Right. All right. Yeah, I personally was really impressed with this. I think that it puts a lot of damage to the board really fast, has some of the fastest kills that we've seen in Standard. Yeah, I think we're all saying the same thing here. I think that this is a nice evolution of the deck, where it really allows... I mean, we literally all said... I mean, you guys both played the deck at the GP, the Scream Red Aetherworks Marvel deck. I've been playing nothing but this deck since I discovered it. I just think that, like... I believe that the secret to this deck are two things. I believe that it's Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, like, having a home and secretly being a different card than people think it is, and two, being the only deck that gets played Doomblade in the form of Harness Lightning. As somebody who's played, like, the Teemer Sean McLaren, like, mid-range deck, that card is not Doomblade in that. It is literally Doomblade in this blue-red deck, in this green-red deck.
I would say the best things about this deck are that you are playing, like, sort of a mediocre-ish Delirium deck, but then a certain percentage of your draws, you just, like, get to slam Marvel and activate it on 4 and cast an Emrakul, and you're like, oh, man, this was the best Gideon ever.
It has basically everything that I liked about the Teemer deck that we played, right? It has Servant of the Conduit, which is, like, huge, huge deal. I don't actually know how anyone ended up on this deck at the Pro Tour without playing Servant of the Conduit, because I don't know how else you beat Spellqueller.
So that's part of it. This deck is also a really good Chandra deck. Like, Chandra's actually
only good Chandra deck.
So good in this deck.
Like, I think it might actually just be the best card in the deck.
Yeah, I mean, every mode on that card is so good.
It's crazy to think that, like, how close we actually got to playing this deck at the Pro Tour too, right? Like... We were like, you know what would make this deck really good? If we got to play, like, Ishkanas and Vessels and stuff instead.
The thing is, this deck wouldn't have been good at the Pro Tour. This deck would have gotten absolutely murdered by the 4 Ulamog version. If you lost a round and just played, or had a bad draft or whatever, or had a good draft but played against, you know, one of the guys on Ultra Pro playing, like, the 4 Ulamog version, you wouldn't have had a prayer.
I mean, that deck was 20% of the field.
Yeah, you would have gotten...
It was there in force.
Absolutely slaughtered.
It's still interesting that we almost got to this deck.
I mean, I'm not saying this isn't a better deck. I'm just saying that matchup against the version that decides it's going to jam 4 main deck Ulamogs is abysmal.
But I find it interesting that, like, in our heads, this was already the natural evolution.
Yeah.
And yet, we didn't discover it. Like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's, like, laziness on our part, but...
It's pretty hard to come up with the actual...
Hindsight is also 2020.
Yeah. All the things that...
But, like, I'm sure that we have a list that is really close to this.
I mean, we were also probably, like, 6 cards off of Blue-White Flash, which was the best-performing deck at the Pro Tour, right?
Sure, that's true.
We just, like, we were being pulled in so many different directions by testing that... It's really hard for
a group of 10 guys to figure out.
Also,
in between working our jobs and living
when
our
you
lives.
Just throw so much stuff at the wall, like some of it is going to be great, right? Yeah. I mean, when you build literally like 400 decks, some of them are going to be close.
I think the highest winning percentage deck was a Gearpure Ori deck. So, from testing, right? I think it like only lost one match total.
Well, I think we only played like 4 matches with it. So,
I mean, I played more than 4.
Right,
it was the awesome kind of terrible.
That deck was so sweet, but it was like it was bad, and we all knew
so like looking at this format, like we just talked about a lot of stuff, like kind of rambled almost. Like I don't know that we have had like power rings like this in a while. So when I look at this format, I see combo deck in the form. I believe that the Aetherworks Marvel deck is a combo deck that has a mediocre mid range game, kind of like. What Michael said. I believe that the Panharmonicon deck is a synergy deck with a combo finish. I believe that we also have midrange in the form of black-green, tempo in the form of either of blue-white, multiple aggro decks, and I think the control decks at large will find a home in this form because of things like Marvel. What would you guys play? Like, you have a tournament tomorrow. Like, not even tomorrow. Like, let's say you have a tournament next week that you have time to prepare for. Like, what are you preparing with?
Yeah, it's going to be tough because, like, I am probably going to play in a PPTQ on Saturday, but I'm going to be spending the week testing Modern for the RPTQ.
Sure.
But there's, like, five different decks that I could see myself playing. I'm probably just going to be going off of whatever seems sweet because I'm not going to have the real time to prep, but I could see myself playing, like probably Teemer, Marvel. I could see myself playing Esper Flash, and I could see myself playing Mardu Vehicles pretty easily, and even like some fringe candidates outside of those. I could also see myself playing Panharmonicon, like very easily.
Just for basically enjoyment value, yeah.
Just because it's sweet, and also pretty good.
Yeah, good enough. Right.
What about you, Michael?
I basically already know exactly what list I would play if I was going to play Standard this week. And it would be a Teemer Marvel list. It would be pretty... It would be quite close to like what Steve Rubin played, because that deck was just brilliant.
Yeah, I would play Teemer Marvel also.
Although, when I say Teemer Marvel, I'm not at all interested in counterspells.
Nope, me either.
Because you can't actually... The problem with this deck, and the problem with like Ceremonious Rejection and the Negate out of the sideboard, is that you don't actually like have any instants in your deck, and you also only play like 20 lands. So
you're not fooling anybody?
Yeah, like your opponent just knows. Like when you're sitting there holding up Negate, like there's nothing else you could be holding up. Like this works in white-blue Flash because like, you know, half your deck has Flash or whatever. When you're playing Teemer Marvel and you're like sitting there, you know, holding up your Spire Bluff Canal every... Your opponent figured it out. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and generally you just have to like actually spend your mana to advance your game plan anyways. So I don't know that the counter spells like really work like you would hope they would. But
no. Yeah, I think I'm on the same page. It's for
Whirler Virtue, yes. So,
which is kind of funny, but yeah, I mean it definitely it fits in. It's the one more. It's a real threat.
I think that card is a beating against control decks. Man, like if I just like play Whirler Virtuoso into Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, my opponent like probably needs to Wrath.
Yeah,
around like a three or four turn clock.
Yeah, it's like a Tireless Tracker that fits better in the main deck.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Which is, like, it's a weird comparison, but because the cards do functionally different things, but not really. It's just, like, with Whirler Virtuoso, it gives you a way to spend your energy on your massive energy, no Marvel hands, and it's a real clock that they have to answer. And, like, there's not very many decks that can just beat 5/1/1 flyers.
Well, or not without tapping in a way that allows you to resolve something else, right? I mean, that's sort of the... It's sort of like Tireless Tracker, except, I mean, it's going to probably be worse than Tireless Tracker most of the time, except that, like, you can curve, like, Puzzle Knot into Whirler Virtuoso into Marvel Activation, something like that. Like, it just curves, it's at a good spot on the curve to be an energy producer.
Right, yeah, it represents a lot in the deck.
It also seems great against, like, the Humans decks, the Mardu Vehicle deck, like... There are lots of times where you're like, oh man, I have like 9 energy. I'm going to fire a Marvel once, but I really wish that I could get an extra blocker or something like that. Like, it's very...
Yep, for all the reasons that you guys just mentioned, that's why it's one of the decks that would be on my consideration. I'm also interested in trying black in the deck. I think that most splashes in the green-red deck are basically free because of the way that your mana works, what you're doing. So I would be interested in trying basically anything.
I think you might be able to double splash, actually.
I did that once.
Yeah, I think you might be able to just, like, actually play, like, 5-color.
Yeah,
I mean, if you had a good reason to, I think you could.
I think you could, too. But, yeah, I'm interested in basically trying different... I mean, it's a big green deck. Like, it's a big green combo-y mid-range. I mean, I play Scape and Flick. It's just my speed. And I like it a lot better than I liked that, the all-in version. So, let's move on. So, this week, as, you know, we mentioned before, we're talking about something new. We're going to talk about... being present. So, going right into our training grounds, I think that what we want to talk about here is kind of like, I think the power of being present, like just how valuable something like that can be. I want to preface this, or not preface this, I want to start this with a story about myself and something that I saw happen a few times against me. And that's a counterspell problem. So oftentimes in my life, when I've been playing decks with counterspells in them, I have told my opponent okay in response to their spell. They resolve their spell, and I realized they had a counterspell in my hand. That's a huge problem. Like, that's just something that you shouldn't ever let happen to yourself. And it's happened to me a few times, and it's happened against me, where my opponent was like, oh man, like, I had the spell queller. Like, I don't know why I let that resolve. Like, that's going to lose me the game. They just flash in their spell queller at the end of turn, because they're like, I mean, I still need to do this.
Yeah.
But, like, but it's just so much worse now.
Right.
And it's something that I think that being present in the game is just going to fix for you. And it's a problem that I've had that I've really done a lot. If you've listened to the podcast for a while, it's a problem that I talked about a long time ago that I don't have anymore. And it's because of this topic that we're going to discuss it. So one of the first parts, and I think the biggest offender that we're just going to knock out right away, is the games around you. Casey, how important is the game next to you?
Not even at all.
But I was sitting next to you one round this weekend. How can you say that?
But no, like, but Michael sitting next to you, like, how much attention should you pay to Michael?
Basically none. I looked at his game when I was shuffling my deck, and basically no other time. His opponent was very interested in my match.
Which, you know,
but probably, that's not important. Yeah. How invested should you be?
Zero.
During
none,
your...
None at all. Because it's just a distraction. It's going to make you think about things that don't matter to you, which the only thing you should care about is...
Like, you looking at Michael's hand and, like, deciding what his play should be isn't helpful to you during your match?
No, not at all, because that's not my hand.
Interesting. But you guys are playing the same deck.
Yeah, but we don't have the same hand. And if we do, you know, whatever. We'll talk about it later.
You guys had the exact same board state at the exact same time, the exact same hand.
What, you've never heard of synchronized magic playing before? You got a bronze medal. It was great.
You got a bronze? That's, like, the third best.
No, not in this. They've got a lot of medals. Bronze, not very good.
But I actually think that, like, I think that people do this so much.
Yeah, it's hard not to sometimes, like, especially in an environment where you're sort of, you know, sardines in a can.
Yeah, and Grand Prix, honestly, if you're not used to them, are kind of overstimulating.
Oh, man. I've played not a huge number, but some of them now, and day one especially is massively overstimulating, like, to the point that I find it actively terrible at times.
I actually don't know who I was playing against on Wednesday, but we were sitting next to your match.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say I was playing against Chris. I don't remember. But I think we're shuffling up for the next game. And we look over, and this is literally what happens. So Casey looks at his life pad, looks at his opponent, has an Emrakul in play, and says, "You're at 10? His opponent says, "Yes." He says, "Okay, attack with Emrakul." His opponent's like, "Okay, block with my spell queller." Casey's like, "Okay, take 10. He's like, "You go to 0? His opponent's like, "No, I'm at 14. Casey's like,
"No.
Nope. Like, I got in this damage. And kind of goes over with him. And I have never been more distracted by a match in my life. First of all, for a few reasons. One, because you asked your opponent what his life total was before you attacked. He agreed he was at 10. I was like, oh, I don't know what's happening right now, but, like, and then whoever my opponent was looked at me and was like, oh, this is going to get interesting.
Yeah.
So, basically, they rewinded to the point where his opponent was at 12, you know, because he just took away an attack.
Compromised.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And then Casey killed his blocker before attacks. Yeah. But what's important here is, how important was all of this information to my match of Magic?
Not even at all. Especially because this was turn 5. So if you were just shuffling up for game 3, things were...
Oh, maybe we had just finished and we were playtesting. I don't even remember.
Yeah. It was so distracting. You didn't even know what you were doing.
Yeah, like, I was so distracted by this in my entire... Like, I've never been this... I think we might have been playtesting.
Yeah, that seems more
likely. But basically, like, Magic is hard enough if you're playing your own game, so don't...
But this is something... Well, the reason I brought this up is because it's something that could easily distract you, right? It's a judge call. It's, like, a kind of high
pressure.
It was a tense moment. Yeah, it was like a tense moment in all of our lives. And yet, it just doesn't impact my life. And it certainly wouldn't have helped me be present in whatever game I was playing, even if it's just a playtesting game, which it probably was, from what it sounds of it. I should have been more focused on that game than anything you were doing.
Right. So, you know, especially when you're sitting around your friends, it's very tempting to want to know what's happening in their game because they're your friends. You want to root for them, you want to see them do well, and you want to see what's happening. But talk about it later.
Well, I mean, mostly if you want to be near your friends again, like, you both have to win, so, you know, do your part.
Right, exactly.
Don't let your friend down.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly. Like, just, you're not John Finkel. Don't think about if you should be eating Indian food. Like, just focus on your match.
Yeah. There's really no excuse, like, right? Like, it just doesn't impact your life at all, and, like, you should just be trying to win the game in front of you.
So you're going to get distracted sometimes. I think the trick is, like, not being, like, oh, I can't believe I got distracted. Just, like, okay, deep breath, recenter, refocus.
Yep.
Like expecting yourself to never be distracted is a completely unrealistic goal.
Sure.
That's it.
Yeah, that's good why I take Adderall at tournaments, dude.
Because then you push your opponent.
I wish you hadn't said that.
Yeah, that's not true. Don't do that.
Then you push the guy next to you out of his chair and are like, no, I'm going to play your game.
Next up we have playing your game, playing the game, not just playing Magic. So Matt Kling guest host one time, and he talked about like how he found himself playing, like, just playing Magic and not playing Magic. What I mean by that is, like, he was just going through the motions of, like, trying to win games. And about, like, you know, 3 matches or to 6 matches later, he was like, I just actually don't remember it happened in any of these matches. Like,
you're just sort of along for the ride.
So right.
I think this happens sometimes if you... I think this can actually happen sometimes if you prepare too much. Like, you start sort of, rather than trying to beat the opponent in front of you, you start trying to beat the matchup the way it usually plays out. And, like, there's value in knowing exactly how things usually play out. But ultimately, like, I did this once this weekend where I brought in natural states against a blue-white opponent who, it became clear by the third game, just didn't have Smuggler's Copter in his deck.
Sure.
And, like, they should have come out because all they could hit was Stasis Snare.
Right.
But it just, like, never really quite clicked for me until somewhere in, you know, the middle of the third game when I drew a natural state and was like, oh, man. And you know, probably shouldn't have sideboarded like a robot.
Right, this would be better as basically anything else.
Yeah, basic land would have been much better. So I think it's easy to do that sometimes where, like, you get caught up in what you expect to be happening versus, like, actually trying to read your opponent and read the play of the game that you're actually playing.
Yeah. It's very true. And just small nuances in the way that your opponent plays the game. Like, if they're setting something up that isn't immediately obvious. That even happened to me, like, in round one of this Grand Prix. I was playing against Mardu Vehicles. I knew that Fleetwheel Cruiser was something that they sometimes played over Gideon. It was kind of like a budget version, but it's also just a slightly more aggressive card.
It's like a semi-justifiable thing, right? It's not, like, completely insane that someone would say, oh, Fleetwheel Cruiser, sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a vehicle. It's aggressive. It's a vehicle's aggro
card,
deck.
Right?
Yeah, it's perfectly reasonable. But I was kind of doing math, and I chose between two plays, thinking, okay, if he plays Gideon and Emblems, I'll go to one, because he had 4 creatures in play. Fleetwheel Cruiser is a 5-power creature, and put me at 0. And it's something that I knew existed, but I was just thinking very automatically. I could have played a Puzzle Knot instead and, you know, been able to at least take another draw step, but I was trying to play towards something specific and didn't really stop to think about the possibility of me taking that one extra point of damage on that turn. And it's just sort of, it was just me playing automatically, not thinking about why did he set it up that way.
It happens often when your opponent attacks in a certain, like, if it becomes very clear your opponent wants you on an exact life total, like, they'll make an attack that's, like, very bad
peculiar
to get you to it. Yeah. Where, I mean, maybe they're just terrible, but more likely they have a plan and thinking about, so why is this game played out exactly this way? you know, why am I at this life total? And maybe they could have attacked in a way to leave me at one less. It's, you never know. But like,
I think that kind of actually brings us to our next point too, Michael, where it's like, if you aren't approaching the game that way, I think you lose out on opportunities to learn.
Yeah. So, I mean, so when you do that, like, obviously, you know, in game two or whatever, you're not going to leave yourself on five life versus an empty board. Like,
right.
Hurt it or lose the Fleet Wheel Cruiser. But I think that in general, you can take a broader lesson from that and not just apply it to that match. That, like, your opponent isn't always going to have exactly what you expect them to have. I mean, I certainly know in deck building, I love if I can find a way to play a card that I don't think people will play around, that's awesome for exactly that reason.
Right.
But if you can take a broader opportunity to consider, like, in general, I mean, you don't want to get too excited, right? Your opponent probably isn't playing, I don't know, Ardara Express, right? You probably don't have to worry about the 8/5 menace and constructed.
Sure.
But there's like a reasonable range of cards in a lot of matchups where if they're playing something a little bit unusual, it should be setting off alarm bells in your head, like, this is not what I expect to happen. Why is what I'm...
Yeah.
Why is this different?
I think that something that... I just want to praise Casey here. I don't know when this clicked in Casey's brain, but something that Casey's gotten, like, significantly better at Magic at, and he actually talked about it on a podcast, and I thought it was, like, coach speak, kind of what we were talking about before, where he's like, I don't know, like, I'm really trying to focus on, like, making every match about a learning opportunity. And it's like, oh, yeah, like, we all say that, but, like, whatever. But I actually think that Casey, like, has gotten significantly better at this. And the reason that, like, what Michael's saying is really important to this, because if you're not present in the game, you might not see that little nuance that, like, ah, man, like, something weird is happening here, and I feel like I'm playing around the wrong thing.
So, this is also... So, I was saying that, like, playing too many games and being automatic can hurt you in this aspect, but can also really help you as far as, like, setting off the sort of the spidey sense of things are not doing...
Yeah, what
they're not playing
right.
This the way I expect them to. Like, an opponent without a card... I mean, I think my favorite example of this ever is I was once it was during Eldritch Moon Limited, but I managed to play around an opponent in Sealed who had a Rattle Chains because he had somehow, like, set off my senses so hard that I knew he had that card. I just knew he had it, even though it was a rare in Sealed. Like, it was obvious.
It was just like...
When he played it, I was like, yeah, of course you had that. I knew you had that.
Right. And it's just, yeah, there's certain things where it's like, that sequence only represents he thinks that he can play this and protect it from a removal spell. What protects it from a removal spell efficiently that he specifically left two mana up for? Rattle Chains, obviously.
Right. So I think sometimes, and sort of the same thing with Fleet Wheel Cruiser, right? If you think that he could have played in some way to, you know, make you dead to unlicensed disintegration or something, you maybe shouldn't play that Ishkana that's in your hand, right? Try to find another way to win. But there's a lot of things like that where it's not about always being right, and if you can't beat it, sometimes you just can't play around it.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to hope that your spidey
sense
is wrong.
But if you're not present in the game, you just don't get that opportunity to make those discoveries and have those learning opportunities. And I think that's what's really important, right? Is that we can't just like play our 2-drop, play our 3-drop, play our 4-drop. Oh, like, I'm so unlucky, I didn't win. That's not fair. Like, you didn't do anything other than play the cards in the order that they were in front of you.
Right. There's a lot that goes into winning a game of Magic sometimes. And there are so many games where it just doesn't matter, right? Somebody has what they need to win, and they play their cards in the order
And you literally, and there was nothing you could have done.
Yeah, what is a way to describe this? It's like, best practice is to do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no best practice. Like,
so what I usually say is it's like the last 25% of your wins. So like with a deck like, let's say, Infect in Modern, anybody can probably get the first 75% of the wins that you could get.
Literally your 5-year-old sister, if you just explained to her what pump spells were, would, you know,
right,
crush plenty of Platinum Pros.
Right, exactly.
Right? Might have Old Crossa, Might have Old Crossa become ends. Okay, you're dead. Great.
Yeah, exactly. The first 75%, they're just there. The last 25%, you have to understand something about the matchup.
And you can't do that if you're not in the matchup.
Right. If you're just like, oh, Might of Old Crossa, Might of Old Crossa become immense, and they're like, hey, Abrupt Decay, and you're like, oh, I'm so unlucky. But, like, you know, once that's happened to you once, you're like, okay, well, I'm not. That's not going to happen to me again.
Right. And I think that the underrated part of being present in a matchup, I think that we talked a little bit about like paying attention to your opponent's matches, or like let's say that that's not. Let's say your phone's ringing, or let's say that like you're just doing something different. Like you're interested in another zone. It's honestly not very polite to your opponent because like you're playing a game together, and like let's pretend that like we were playing chess, and like every couple minutes I like walk. I was like hold on 1 second. Like let me check my tweets. Let me do this. Let me do that. Like that would be inappropriate. And being in the game does like it's important for that reason too. I think that Michael, you'd probably be pretty upset if like somebody interrupted your game of Magic to like tweet about your game of Magic, right?
I mean, I think this happens on Magic Online like all the time, like just actually like every match you play.
Oh, and it's I actually that was what I was thinking of when I put this into the training ground.
Like, and I mean, ultimately, I've learned to mostly accept it. It's mostly frustrating when you're playing a deck where basically no matter how long the games go, just no one could possibly. Like, if I'm playing Infect against like Abzan, right? We're just not really capable of playing like 25 minutes of. I'm just gonna either win or die. There's no way that either of us can use up our chess clock without like, you know, forgetting that we're in the game and you know pulling up the internet to look at something else. So it's frustrating. So like, it's okay to this. I guess kind of goes back to pace to some extent, right? You can play at the speed that's appropriate, but if you're like multitasking all the time, be that actually literal multitasking or just not keeping your brain focused, it's rude to your opponent, but it also takes away your opportunity. It's really hard to play great Magic when you're not just thinking about the game.
Brings me to my next point is like, if you're not in the, like, let's say that you were somehow able to like find opportunities to learn. I think this might be kind of like doubling up on this, but I don't think that you're able to reflect on a match without being in the match, right? Kind of like what Matt said, where he's like, yeah, I played like 15 games, but I like don't remember any of them. It's like, why not? Like,
yeah.
How, if you had just been paying attention, I feel like you could tell me like some details about these games.
Yeah, it's hard to get anything out of it where you're like, I think I went, you know, 10-5 in those games, and I think that, you know, whatever card was pretty good. Let me think. I don't remember. What did I play against? I ever board it in?
It's also about the event type to some extent, too. Like, it's a lot harder to remember every game of every round at a Grand Prix than it is to remember, you know, what was good when you're playtesting a matchup to find out what was good, right? I mean, it's hard to be, like, ultra-present for 15 rounds consecutively at every single moment.
Yeah, and I mean, the Grand Prix is just a draining experience, especially, like, this one, every round went 20, 30 minutes over time. So day one was 12 hours, you know? It was taxing. I certainly don't remember every play of every game of that.
Right. And I mean, it's about being realistic with that kind of stuff, too. Like, you can improve at being present without being perfect at it, right?
Yeah.
And
I think that when you do it, you just get to, like, see more of the game that's going on, too. Like, when we watch Owen Turnwald play, right? I can't think of a better example of somebody who's like present in the game that they're playing.
Yeah, and just knows what's happening.
Right, yeah, and like so often people will like try and correct people in coverage, try and like people that are playing the game that they're in. I was really guilty of this for a long time. Quentin and I had a moment where he was in the top 8 of a PTQ, and I was just taking notes behind him to talk to him about the match later. And I thought he had to activate Raging Ravine, attack with Raging Ravine, bolt you play. Uh-huh. And he says he was one mana short. And like, there's no way that I'm right and he's wrong if he's present in the game, right? Like, he's going to know his land, like
how many lands.
Because he's been thinking about that for 4 turns.
Right.
That,
right? He's been trying to. He drew the bolt. He was like just waiting to top deck that land. And the thing is like, if he's not present in that game and he's like not focused on what's going on, he might not even see that line that I think I'm seeing. And the thing is like, so often we try and correct people, or we try and think that we're better than people and like what they're thinking, when in fact, like, you see a lot more when you're in that situation, and you can feel the beauty of magic, really, like that moment between you and your opponent. Mm-hmm. I feel like you're losing so much when you're not present, right? Like, you just lose out on that beauty.
Yeah, just everything. The nuances of the game, like, what really won or lost the game is, like, it's so easy to just get washed away when you're not really there.
Well, it's less interesting when you win, and it's more tilting when you lose, right? Because
right.
you feel like you couldn't have done anything.
You just,
and
when, you don't even know what you could have done.
Just
you weren't
something
in the
that
game.
Happened to you.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're a victim rather than a participant.
Right.
And, yeah, I think with that, I kind of want to wrap this up and just say that I am going to do my best to always be a participant in my games and, like, do whatever I can be to be present in the game. And one, because I think it's kind to my opponent, and two, because I think that it makes me better at Magic and makes for better gameplay. And I hope that you, both of you, and all of our listeners can do the same thing. Like, really take a moment to be a part of what makes Magic beautiful and that interaction between you and your opponent, and make it about improving and being better and, I mean, really trying to best your opponent at the best that you can be and the best that they can be. So, don't forget to check out the Patreon. You go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. Starting at $1 per month, anything that you see fit. The podcast will always be free, but that doesn't mean that everything that we get isn't appreciated. It also makes things like this a stream every week possible, YouTube videos. There's no video with Matt or Michael this week. Not because of them, it's actually because of me. I'm just actually super tired from being in the hospital. Michael got here just in time to do a deck tech with me, and I told him we're not doing one because, I mean, I just can't do it. So, but you should still go to the YouTube channel. Check out, there's a new video still this week, and there's multiple videos every week, deck techs, testing videos, weekly blog posts, tons of stuff on that YouTube channel. And that's all possible because of the Patreon. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Where can people find you guys?
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
You can find me on Facebook, Michael Hinderacher, or on Twitter, Magic Mike MTG.
Boom. You got to change your Twitter handle to Goldilocks MTG.
No, that's not happening.
Why not? I'll change mine to the He's.
No. Because that thing, the He's is going to stick no matter what you do, and Goldilocks isn't, so I'm just not encouraging that behavior.
That's not true. If I, like, offer some kind of prize, reveal tweeting at you, calling you the Goldilocks, like, that definitely will stick.
I don't think so. We'll see.
That's just... I mean, now it's definitely going to stick, because you're, like, doing this on the podcast, being defiant. Like, now it's just happening to you.
It's like, I don't... We'll see.
We'll see.
I'm not worried about it.
Are you... not worried enough about it, or too worried about it, or just right?
I mean, people
about
talked
it.
About grilled cheese for a long time.
Yeah, and that's—I think that's because it like noticeably bothered me. Where this, I'm just not going
to
worry.
You offered
about
to murder me. Yeah, not you threatened. You threatened to murder me if I covered.
I just said it was on
Casey,
the table.
Casey's just a good guy like that.
Yeah. Would you like me to murder you? you can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Hallen. You can find all of us every week in the Facebook group and on mtgcast.com, as well as constructivecriticism.com. You can also find tons of content on the YouTube channel as well as on the Patreon page. So check it out, patreon.com/ccmtg. You can constructive criticism Facebook group. Actually, that's not true. It's not called that anymore. It is called the Constructive Criticism Family. And, I think that name suits us, even though Michael's rolling his eyes right now.
Only a little.
I don't know. Like, I just think that...
I think it's cheesy.
So it is cheesy, but like when somebody said it, I was like, you know what? Sure. So
cheesy isn't a criticism. It's just...
A statement of fact.
I mean, that's a grilled cheese aficionado. I don't think that you would ever find...
yeah, so like...
Literally things being
you are totally welcome to like come up and talk to any of us at a Magic tournament. But
I was going to ask, did that happen to you guys this weekend?
No,
but don't call me Brother Michael. That would be weird. Even though we're
that would be weird.
See, that's why I don't want to give anyone the wrong idea. Like friendly enough guy, just you know.
What
that,
if it
that
was like Hulk Hogan style, like Michael
brother?
Yeah.
I mean, if it was actually Hulk Hogan, I'd be mostly okay with that.
You can join the clan by messaging me on Spencer at Spencer13dev, anytime that I'm logged into MTGR. I'd be happy to add you. You can also tweet at us by using the hashtag would that be good. We will read basically anything. You know, don't test us on that, because, like, there might be stuff that I won't read. But let's do this. So, tweeting with the first tweet with hashtag would that be good. We have the map saying, playing CCMTG intro music at 1.4 speed. Hashtag would that be good. I listen to all of my podcasts at about 1.3 to 1.4. So, that's just how I hear intro music.
Is it terrifying? Does it sound like the Chipmunks?
Nope. No, it actually...
That's too bad.
Actually, we sound really smart at 1.3 speed, whereas people who listen to us at normal speed might think that we... I mean... Yeah, exactly.
I'm Casey.
That's a really good impression of yourself.
I mean, by definition, if you're doing it, it's a good impression of yourself.
Exactly. Then we have DJ Cathro getting credited for hosting LTO MTG on the Magic Daily Update instead of Manny and MTG Drew. So here's the thing is I think that they pull that off of our bios page, which Danny isn't on, and Manny and Drew were on at that time. They've since been deleted, but we still need to add Danny to it. Yeah. But if you haven't checked out the other podcast hosted by me, you can go to constructcriticism.com and find Limited Time Only, done with DJ Cathro, as he's on Twitter.
God, DJ Cathro. I think I just want to start calling Danny DJ Cathro in real life. Like,
but you have to be like, DJ Cathro!
right. No, like, yeah. DJ would be great.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
But Danny is really good on the podcast, and yeah.
I mean, you could have just left the last part of that sentence. Danny is really good.
At talking?
Most things.
Being loud?
Playing Magic.
Having opinions? Mm-hmm. Saying nonsense? Most things. He's good at a lot of things. I just don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, it was like a compliment before you ruined it, but...
But then I would be being nice to Danny.
Yeah. Which is...
Danny does have the greatest quote of anyone that I've ever talked to ever. When we were testing for the Pro Tour, the exact quote was, I can either... talk or listen, so I usually choose to talk. I have a really hard time multitasking, so I can either talk or listen, and I usually choose to talk. And I was like, what?
Makes sense to me.
Abzan standard tokens with cryptolith right to power Eldrazi. Hashtag would that be good. Yeah, I think that there have been a few cryptolith right decks that people have tried to play recently. And I think the card is, like, really powerful. So if you can find a strategy to make the card work in, I don't fault you for it. It would be surprising to me if it was more powerful than Panharmonicon right now.
Or Emrakul.
Yeah.
Like, you pretty much...
But that being said, if there's a way to do it, go for it. Like... I would not fault somebody for trying to make something like that happen. Yeheni's expertise as a way to cast non-cost or split cards in Modern. Oh, so like Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, we were talking about the old whatever this card is called, Ancestral Visions into Goblin Dark Dwellers Flashback Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, so that seems broken.
And the card doesn't even kill Dark Dwellers, so if you happen to have a Dark Dwellers in play already, like you can now attack for 8 menacing points of damage.
Boom.
Or bust.
So,
or both.
Sure. So is this the, like...
Yeah, so for those who don't know, this card is black 2. For all creatures, get -3/-3. You may cast a card from your hand with converted mana cost 3 or less without paying its mana cost.
Boom.
Yeah, that's it's an interesting card.
I just don't think that I've ever seen a card cheat mana cost like this and not seen play. So I believe it will see play.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know that it'll see Modern play, because -3/-3 just doesn't kill all that much in Modern.
So I worry that it's not good enough to be in, like, the
main...
But,
like, what if it kills, like, 2 things and you get 2 Ancestral Visions?
My concern with this card is that, like, it's not as niche-y as the niche cards. That, like, -3/-3 has to be broadly good, but if you're, like, not that many decks are main decking that type of effect right now. And if you're looking at a sideboard card, it's probably worse than both Damnation and Anger of the Gods, depending on what you're trying to beat.
Right.
In Standard, I think it mostly just comes down to whether or not -3/-3 actually kills anything. like Languish at times did not see that much play because it didn't, you know, there were X5s or whatever.
I think this card is has enough of it. But yeah, I think this is Scotty for you, Manny. So I was trying to.
I mean, basically anything that lets you cast spells.
But what if you restore balance them?
Boom. So I just don't just like
so much booms.
I just don't like.
What if you boom bust?
Yeah.
Boom.
So if you bust them,
I literally said that exact same thing. Like we had the same exchange.
Yeah.
Like 2 minutes ago.
Don't worry about it.
I don't know. Like
boom.
I wasn't present.
Apparently.
Touche. So does it give all creatures -3/-3, and then you cast a spell?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so you can do it and then cast a Wild Nacatl
right,
for
so
free. Right,
so you put in a creature or whatever. That's what I was getting at, is you can cast a creature after it. So, I mean, that's not nothing.
Wait, maybe it doesn't. Maybe...
No, it does. It works like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because okay. it says...
It works exactly. I know
cast,
it does.
Oh, because right? it's... Does it have, like, a colon or a period? Or it's whatever
a,
it would need to have. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I remember.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that card is good. It just, it's going to depend on where
But the question here is split cards or non-cast cards. So, do you want to restore balance somebody, boom bust them, Ancestral Visions? That, I mean, that's something that I want to do.
I want to living end them so it's not so mean.
Sure.
All right.
I'm going to kill a couple of your creatures first so you can have them back so you don't feel so bad while I'm killing you.
What's interesting is this card actually might be good in Living End, not because of that, but because like it actually gives you a way to cast Living End so that you draw.
Next up we have... You can't cast anything else in the deck. I guess you can cast Violent Outburst and... Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Little thing I like to call deck building. Although it's like
that I'm
casting Violent Outburst off of it sounds so bad. Because you're like, kill all your creatures, then bring them back.
No, it's being kind of nice. You just like, you don't want to be a complete, you know, you don't want to be like really rude, only a little rude.
Even if this didn't wipe your board, I could still beat you, and I'm going to prove that to you.
I'm going to double wipe it, but it's inverse, so the second one actually unwipes it, my bad.
I'd be so perplexed. Like, I'm sure that I'm screwed. But
I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna play this deck at least at one point just for the troll value.
I'm literally dying right now. All right. Next, we have became a patron of CCMTG this week. First Patreon I ever supported. Hashtag that'd be good. One, I'm sorry about this episode because we laughed so hard during that last question. No, this episode is actually really fun, and I am. It was only as good as it was because you supported us.
Yeah.
No.
So if you exactly. withdraw your support, we'll, you know, make some changes and...
Yeah. Make those podcasts worse again. Hashtag make CCMTG bad again. No, I honestly, like, I said this to him, and I don't think that words express what it means when somebody's like, the words that you were saying that are coming out of your mouth are worth money to me. Like... Your opinion has helped me enough that I'm willing to pay you for it is something that I don't think that I could express in words as to, like, how kind that is.
I mean, it makes it feel good, and it makes it so that we can, you know, spend money on things like new microphones and...
Right. I'm, like, way comfortable right now. I don't know about
you. Yeah, like, developing new stuff to produce. And so, like, it helps us so much, and... The fact that you get enough value out of it that you want to give us any amount of money just feels great.
Yeah. And, like, we can now, for Christmas, we can get Michael a metal polishing kit, and, like, we couldn't have done that without your support, so thank you so much.
Yeah. I think I talked to Casey at length when I was 3-3 about going to cry in the shower. Yeah.
with your metal?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did, and then I didn't lose again, so, you know.
Yeah.
It was what I needed. It was the motivation I needed. I didn't have my metal polishing equipment with me. So
I don't think this has happened since Michael was on the podcast, but it's like an old inside joke. So we have at Taylor Swift 13 at CCMDG making me realize how much I say boom. Hashtag would that be good.
Boom.
So first of all, thank you. I do often miss being tweeted at with like random famous people. That was a great time in my life. It's actually the reason we brought back Hashtag With It Be Good. I'm glad that you...
I think it actually... It popped up in my Facebook, or on my Time Hop, rather, the other day. It might have actually been from Eggbeat, so he might have seen it too and remembered. Because it was like, at Spencer, Casey, and The Rock something. And It's like, oh, yeah, that's great.
I remember. I remember when that was a thing. No, it really is great. Like, I really appreciate, one, being tweeted at with Taylor Swift. Like, it just makes me feel more important, even though I'm not. And two, yeah, we say boom a lot.
Yeah, it's actually been increasing exponentially since we realized it was a problem. And
it's kind of like when you say like a lot on a podcast and you realize that you're saying like too much, so you like try and like fix it, like
you like make a conscious effort, yeah, to like stop saying like,
yeah, it's like, it's really like hard,
so impossible.
The, yeah, problem, the problem is that anytime you're saying boom other than in an airport, it's actually pretty great. So
yeah,
it's probably my favorite one word phrase.
Yeah. In standard, I want to splash black in my red white midrange deck for sideboard cards. That should look up good. I think that black is almost a free splash if you do it right in a lot of these red white decks. And if you have a good reason to do it, then maybe try. I think you need to be a little bit lower to the curve, so hopefully you have a more aggressive midrange deck, but I think it's very possible.
If the fast lands are good in your deck, it's a right. lot cheaper.
Yep.
Like, the marginal cost is not that high.
Yep. Yep. Honest Bob says, Big Kitty looks so good. Hashtag will that be good. I assume he's talking about the new Ajani. I don't know. I think that the card actually looks like... Somebody asked me about it today. I said I literally think it's garbage. So a few reasons. One, I've been burned on cards like these before. This is the kind of, this is like a removal spell on a stick that draws cards. Like, what more could I want in the world? It's at a high cost. I just...
Yeah, 6-mana removal just, spell is, like, not...
Yeah, and I feel like great, it just gets outclassed by so many things. Like, if I was going to play a card like this, like, why wouldn't I just play Tamiyo?
Or Sorin.
Yeah.
Right? Sorin. It also draws a card that shoots your opponent, and it, like, drain lifes planeswalkers and creatures.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's an interesting card in that, like, its minus is powerful, because, like, it just tells creatures to get wrecked. Like, it just gets rid of them. And the plus is obviously, like, if you construct your deck correctly, man, like, that could be so good. It just, like, in any game where you are comfortably plussing this card, you're winning handily, probably without it.
Right, you played a 6-mana card that, like, killed one creature and then they couldn't deal it 2 damage. Like, yeah, it sounds like you didn't really need those extra cards. So, when we first were talking about this card, I think it was Danny who said it was, like,
it was like Nahiri.
Like Nahiri, and what he meant was that it was +2 and -2, but what I thought he meant was that it cost 4 mana. And I was really excited about it when it cost 4 mana, and then I found out it cost 6 mana, so I can't actually accurately judge this card because the version that I thought it was so much better than the version that
you thought it
was
4?
Yeah, man, if this card was 4 mana, it would be great.
Even then, would it actually not be outclassed by Tamiyo?
Yeah, the whole, like, plus just draw cards and turtle sure. up thing is, like, a lot better than Tamiyo's plus.
Yeah.
You could just play this in a deck with literally only, like, you would need so few spells. Because if it costs 4, like, this and Reflector Mage and, I don't know.
Spellqueller and Tamiyo. Yeah.
If you have, like, creatures that start replicating yeah. spells, the, like, plus draw 2, like, if your opponent can't, if it actually, this is a stupid conversation to have, because obviously it doesn't cost 4, but if it did,
if things weren't this the card same, would be like, different, and this card would be good.
Absurdly unbeatable if you played it on 4 and your opponent couldn't just kill it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because it can, like, it, as is, I think it's a casual, like, super friends deck type of card.
Oh, man. This just got spoiled, so let's talk about it right now.
Okay.
Black X, improvise. Your artifacts can help cast this card. Each artifact you tap after you're done activating mana abilities may pay 1 for this. So Convoke 4 artifacts. Black X, target creature gets +X/+X until end of turn, you gain X life. Oh, I thought it was all creatures get -X/-X until end of turn, and I was like, this card
oh,
is
it, oh, you said plus. I was like, man, X. This is a really weird flavor for a black card.
-X/-X. So like one creature hatred? Gets... Yeah, it's, yeah.
You'd have to have a lot of artifact. I don't know.
Well, I mean, so it's straight. It's black X?
No, black X.
Just, isn't this just X. worse than Deadwind?
This feels like a limited all-star, because you're just going to be like, yeah, tap servos, kill your enormous thing that's making my servos
yeah, but
unable
like,
to attack.
It was 30. So much better when I got it, when it was a
Wrath.
Yeah,
I don't think this card
so
is great.
So it's target creature gets minus...
Yeah.
I just don't know how you'll ever be able to get much value out of this card.
It's like, it'll be great
said,
and limited.
I'm sure it'll dominate standard, because every time I feel like a card like this is terrible, it's great, but...
This card isn't great.
Well, that is it for this week. Thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week. For those who are staying after the podcast, you might be in our fantasy football league. And we just want to give a few shout-outs while Michael's not in the room. So shout-out to Casey for making the playoffs.
Thanks. Shout-out to you as well, man.
Yeah, making the playoffs. Yeah. And shout-out to Adrian Carr, who also made the playoffs.
Good job, Adrian.
I believe he had the third best record in the league.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Kyle Norman, who had the fourth best record in the league, unfortunately doesn't get to make the playoffs.
Yeah, because of a... I don't want to go so far as to say crooked system set up by our commissioner, Michael Hinderacher.
The only person to benefit from this system was, in fact, the commissioner, Michael Hinderacher.
Yeah, I don't know how he knew which teams would be bad and which teams would be good. He's obviously very... If he were half as good at fantasy football as he was at making divisions...
Yeah. I mean, when you literally make the playoffs with a losing record and you're commissioner of the league, something's fishy here.
Yeah. It feels a little bit like gerrymandering.
Yep. So all I'm going to say is shout out to those who did well. Anti-shout out to Michael. And let's all do everything we can to beat the guy who literally never set a lineup this year.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, again for listening. And thanks for enjoying the digs on Michael. So thank you. Bye.
Bye.